Good morning, everyone. So it looks like we have a quorum. It is 10 o'clock, so I'm here to call to order the Committee on Rules and Legislation. Chair Winkler is caught in traffic, and so I'm going to begin the hearing with informal presentations. We will hold off on any action until the chair arrives. So our first presentation is by Carl Hamre on tracking bills in the state legislature. Materials were passed out to all of you, so if you do not have it, please let the page know. But otherwise, we'll go ahead and turn it over to Mr. Is it Hamre?
Hamre.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, so I'm Carl Hamre. I'm the index clerk for the House, so I manage the House Index Department, and we are part of the chief clerk's office here in the Capitol. So I've been asked to just present real briefly a few things about our bill search page and then the bill status page and where you can find certain pieces of information. So if you can kind of follow along on the screens, the first link on the web page is our bill search form, and here is where you can search various ways to get your bill information. If you already know a bill number, your problem is solved. You just type it in and you'll get right to the bill. Most people don't know that, and so probably the most common search used is the keyword search that's found right underneath. A couple other searches that are pretty useful is if you know the author of the bill, you can select that author under that column and bring up a list of every bill that that member has introduced. And then you can also search by everything that the author has signed on to in any way. So those are pretty straightforward bill searches. One that's kind of a little bit more useful is the topic search. If you can't find what you're looking for, you don't know the author, we do have all bills indexed by topic. And these topics are, some of them are very finite, some of them are very broad, so this search is more or less useful depending on how specific the information you have is. In your handout, I printed out the list of bills that are on constitutional amendments. And so that's like a very finite, specific group of bills. So you can see the dozen bills so far in this session that would make any amendment to the Minnesota Constitution. There's some other searches I'm not going to get into, but you can bring up all the bills that are in a cert committee, all the bills by certain actions that have taken place, or statutory citation. If anybody ever wants like more in-depth information on this, please contact me and we can find a time to really go into it deeper if you want. Should also mention at the very top of the screen, you can select past sessions. So you can select, you can go back and search in past legislative sessions for bills and all the past members and committees and everything is in there. So that's kind of the bill search page in a nutshell. The second piece that I really want to kind of look at is what happens when we actually find our bill. And so I've just picked a bill that I know has kind of moved a little bit, has had some action and has some things we can look at. It's House File 80. It's a capital investment bill. So you get to this screen, and what are we looking at? Well, we have the description of the bill, we have all the authors, and underneath we have all the actions that this bill has gone through and in the process in the House so far. So you can see it was introduced, referred to the division, And that division actually amended the bill and returned it to Ways and Means. It's going to bring me to my next kind of point here. Up here on the top of the screen, you're going to see that the current bill text, so we've listed the latest version. Whatever the latest version of this bill is should appear right here. In this case, it's a division engrossment. And so that's going to be the bill engrossed to incorporate whatever amendments that division did. The PDF of it is available too, and this gives you kind of the official looking bill header, and then the bill history, that action is on top, so that's reflected on the PDF. And any time a bill is engrossed, that should be updated. The other thing, though, that might be of use to members would be getting out what's called the division report, and that's going to be found on the division websites themselves. So in this case, you'd go to that capital investment division, and you're going to see the division report for House File 80. And that's going to give you just the amendments that took place in that division. So that could be useful, especially when you're dealing with larger bills. You're just going to get the changes instead of the whole bill. So the division engrossment is found where all the engrossments are, the official and division engrossment and every version of the bill. And these division reports are found on the division websites themselves.
Mr. Hamry?
Yep.
I'm just curious, since there's a lot of material, would you be okay with taking questions throughout the presentation?
Yep.
So I'd like to recognize Representative Dowd.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If in the bill tracking system, and I can't see that screen over there, so I'm going to ask my question, then I'm going to turn around and look here. Could you just type in on the bill tracking HFXXXX and just tell us how those bills are tracked?
Not sure I understand the question. Type in.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, there's been a lot of hearings on bills with just HFXXXX, and just wondering how the public can track that.
Mr. Hamry.
Madam Chair and members, I'm not aware of how committees are hearing bills that have no numbers assigned to them. That would be beyond me.
Representative Dowd?
That's it.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Hamry.
Okay. Anyways, so you've got access to the various versions of the bills. Those status pages have page number links that take you to the journal entry for certain bill actions. All of that is pretty straightforward. And I would just encourage anybody to call our office if you have any questions or problems, or if you want additional instruction or help, or if your staff needs some help with something, we're certainly there to help members and the public at any time. So you can call our public phone number or contact me personally. I can come over and help show you anything you need.
Is that it for your presentation, Mr. Hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have any questions? Yes, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a question for Mr. McCormick. I'm trying to think. I've been here, I think, 14 years. I seem like I maybe Representative Carlson can explain. Has there Has there ever been any, like, XXX files that have ever been heard in this body prior to 2000 and, previous to this year? Has that ever happened before?
Well,
Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, historically, that has happened from time to time when a committee chair anticipates a bill being introduced and may schedule a hearing, but it hasn't received a House file number yet. And that goes way back. It's a practice that I think is probably used pretty rarely, but it has been used, and it's been used historically. They would generally, if it said XXX, it would have the subject matter that it would be dealing with, is I think what typically happens. Now, I don't recall that I've received, and I have received a few bills in Ways and Means that have come in that way, because that the only ones that we're receiving do have a House file number before they're referred. But I suspect a committee chair might anticipate a bill coming. It's probably pretty similar to, you know, if a committee chair wants to have a hearing with some oversight on an issue, they probably should just maybe put it down that it's an informational hearing on, and then what the topic is, rather than XXX. I would agree with that. Is hard to track, and I don't know the session how often it's been used, but it has been used historically.
Any follow up, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it was actually more of a question for Mr. McCormick, but I'm not sure if Representative Carlson helped my argument. But. So I just know that we've all fallen short, I guess was kind of my point during my tenure, and yes, we can do better, and it would be hard for folks to track, and I respect that, but we've all been guilty of sinning, I believe, so.
Yes, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, I do have a question of the witness. You did reference me by name, by the way, Representative Lilly. That's why I responded. I didn't mean to jump ahead of Mr. McCormick. But we're having a huge problem with technology right now. And I've talked to members on both sides of the aisle and some staff. And I'm just curious, are you having any problems with technology in your department? For me, it's been some of my emails have bounced back. My calendars have been items that I didn't even know existed popped up. I think it was yesterday I was scheduled for a conference call that I didn't know, and there wasn't one. It just appeared, conference call. Even this morning on my iPad, this meeting did not show up. On my phone, it did for 9:30. The change to 10 o'clock didn't show up, even though it had been posted. So my question of you is your department experiencing any technological problems with our computer system?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, no, I have not had any problems, and I've been in communication with your staff, specifically via email, quite a bit in the last few weeks. I have not had any problem, and a lot of this is conducted through email, so I have not had any problems, really.
And Madam Chair, the only reason I ask is that, you know, he's displaying information here and wondering if there was a problem that was even broader based than members' emails and calendars. But thank you.
Thank you. And I do have a list going here. So Representative Dowd, you're next.
Yeah, thank you. Just on the previous comments about the House file XXXX, that is what happens when a hearing happens on a bill that hasn't been introduced yet. And I kind of knew the answer to the question before I asked it, of course. But I did that to display that the people at home who, you know, this presentation is about how people can follow the bills. And it is a problem that those bills aren't tracked in this system. So I appreciate Representative Carlson. I think you're right. And Representative Lilly, this has been done, I think, on occasion by both sides of the aisle. It is something that I think we all can do better. And I think, Chair Carlson, your point is right. We should, the committee chairs should probably just post that they're having an informational hearing on a subject. And then if they want to talk about, hey, you know, my intent is to introduce a bill, here's the text of that, as they're having a hearing on that subject, I think that would maybe make it less confusing for the public. But it is difficult. I hope, and I don't know the answer to this, but I hope that a hearing on a bill that's HFXXXX that hasn't been introduced yet, that doesn't have a House file number, I hope that that's not a real hearing on the bill. I hope it is just an informational, and that we don't actually start the real hearing process in each committee stop that that bill needs to go to until after it's introduced and it actually gets a House file number, because that's when the public can start tracking the process. So I don't know the answer to that question. I don't even need anybody to respond to that, but I just would hope that that we don't do that, because I think it does make it confusing for the public to follow along that process. But and you're right, Representative Lilly, I think both sides of the aisle have done it in the past, and we should just be more conscious about making sure that we have a system where the public can follow what's going on. So thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just can't hear myself. Thank you, Madam Chair. Did I say speaker?
I'll take it.
Promotion.
Not quite yet, right?
Madam Chair, I won't try your first name. I'm still learning it.
Khalid.
Thank you. I think this is an important topic, and the discussion has been correct. It has happened too much, and the discussion of the this agenda item today is how we make these bills more transparent to the public so they can see them. So my question would be for Mr. McCormick. We have not put together the rules yet, Mr. McCormick. Is there anything we can do and be deliberate from this point forward in setting a rule up to somehow require that the chairs don't do XXX hearings? This might be a rhetorical question, but I'd be interested in your comments.
Mr. McCormick?
I think I'll broaden out the discussion a little bit, members. There is a legitimate use for an XXX file, although Representative Doubt is right to say that there are other, maybe better ways to handle it. And under House rules, a committee can decide to create a committee bill. In creating a committee bill, which is, this is rarely used, but I've actually, staff committees have done it, the committee just begins to build the bill by amendment, and when the committee has seized action, it introduces the bill. That's a legitimate method of getting into a bill, and I think I've done this with Representative Murphy, and I've done this in the Senate in the past. When you do that, it's better to, sometimes people we'll have a shorthand and say House File XXX, but they should always say what you're building. Like, for example, the Omnibus Legacy Bill. There's a variety of reasons why you might or might not want to do this, but it's legitimate under the rules. The second use, which I've heard for people doing House File XXX, which I think is also legitimate but is probably a bad shorthand, is in the interim. Let's say that we're building a new fishing license and fishing regulation bill with interim hearings, but people want to see the legislation. Our office will draft it. It's just a House research document. It's not anything. You shouldn't call it House File XXX. You should say draft fishing bill, but people don't sometimes do that, and it confuses people because it's not a House file anything. The more common thing that we're talking about here is when there's a Monday bill introduction, and yet they're going to hear the bill on Tuesday. And so they calendar it as House File XXX, but they intend to change that at the moment the bill is introduced and gets a number. Then they'll say, oh, now this is really House File 1210. In that case, they're trying to say, get ready for this. It's going to be introduced Monday and Tuesday. We're going to hear an actual bill, and we're going to take action on an actual bill. I like it if people say House File XXX pending introduction Monday or something like that, to tell people that you're really working on a bill here when you get to the Tuesday hearing. And I guess the last scenario is the one where you're doing purely informational on a bill and you don't know whether you want to introduce it. So therefore and once again, instead of saying House File XXX, you're better off to say draft of potential real estate bill. for discussion or informational purposes. So all those different allocutions sometimes get boiled down into a shorthand, House File XXXX, which I think is often a confusing nomenclature because it sounds like you're going to take action on a bill when it may be informational. You may be building a bill for later action. You may be waiting on a bill. But we all get caught into the time crunch, and it happens every session under everybody. If we don't want to do this anymore, we could address it by rule, or we could address it by training of chairs and CAs. There may be times we feel like we still want to do it, but it's worth the discussion.
Any follow-up, Mr. Drazkowski, Representative Drazkowski?
Thank you, Mr. McCormick and Madam Chair. I wonder if that, and I've seen it a lot, that practice where the chair and sometimes it's, yeah, I mean, the time crunch comes, but should we be greasing the skids here for people who are members at the expense of the public? That's the question. Because the public can't, I mean, if you post on Wednesday that you're going to be hearing a bill on Monday and it's XXX and it's introduced on Friday or Monday, and then it does get a number for the committee will probably have that because it'll be emailed to them. And I've seen chairs do that where they actually email to them. But the public looking on the website as in doing the search through the conventional means is not going to get that information. So I think that's the concern. And that's the really kind of the narrow portion, which is probably the most common use of X. Is it three X's or four? However many it is, of the X's, if you will. That's the most common form and the one I think the people probably have the most concern about. So I think we should have the discussion and maybe as part of the rules provide some guidance not only for this legislature, but by potentially adopting them in the rules, making it something that guides the behavior for future legislatures as those rules will likely carry on. Because to just say we're going to train the chairs or we're all going to try, I think that's probably been done before. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Something we can talk about in the future, absolutely. The next person on the list is Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is something that I have heard multiple times. I'm on six committees, and I've heard this concern from agencies who said they didn't have time to review language, to the proponents and the opponents of bills, to the advocates. They've all have said the same thing in multiple committees of mine, that they haven't had time to review the bills. And what's happened is maybe they did get a bill introduction on Monday, and we had a hearing on Tuesday or Wednesday. And it's not a good way to do policy. You know, all I want to do here is do good work, do good policy. And it's very challenging when you don't have time to even read the language. And if the language isn't available to us, it's certainly not available to the public or those that have to weigh in. It's very difficult to do a committee hearing and do it well when those that are affected by that policy do not have time to even review the policy. Let me give you an example of how we could do it better. I had a chair contact me actually on Sunday, which things are going quickly, I guess, but I don't really appreciate, but at least there was an attempt to contact me on a Sunday to say, we'd like to do a bill hearing on Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. The language is not available for you to review. They didn't have a PDF of the language. And the language will not be public until after Monday's introductions, which means it's probably not available until the afternoon. I was asked if I would give my blessing to have that hearing, and I declined. I said I can't give my blessing on something that I cannot read, that the public cannot read. It's just, and that was after multiple hearings that I've heard people complain that there wasn't enough time to review language. I don't think this is a good way to do policy. I don't think this is a good way to have people that are affected by this policy to weigh in. And I am incredibly concerned, and I appreciate that this was sort of brought to light when we look at how does the public review the bills. If I can't even see the language, how is the public going to see the language? And so I really hope that we do a better job and make things available more than one day before a hearing. a day and a few hours. People need to weigh in. They need to consider. They need to think about the ramifications of these bills. We're doing really big policy changes, and I think we need to give that time and some respect to the public. And I just ask that we just also do a better job. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Chair Winkler, you have a response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative O'Neill, I think you raise a good point. The thing to remember, though, is that if a bill doesn't have 3 days' notice, it generally shouldn't be heard until we are at the point where we are, you know, up against very tight deadlines, and, you know, we have a large volume of things to move in a very constrained amount of time. So there will be times when it's necessary. But I think you were correct to say that you shouldn't have the bill hearing on Wednesday. It is a matter of a 3 days' notice, and at this point in session, there's very few times, if any, when a bill should not be posted for 3 days before it's heard. And so as these issues have come up, we've directed chairs to give the proper notice, and I hope if you are on a committee and that is happening and you've objected and it goes forward anyway, that you would bring your objection to the chair, and if that doesn't work, bring it to House leadership.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Winkler. I appreciate that. It's I just want to do good work here, and I think it needs to be transparent, so I appreciate that. And it's just so important that everyone has the time to review the language. We're doing really big policy changes this time through. I serve on some committees that we're looking at doing historic changes, and those deserve time and proper vetting. And so I really do appreciate if we could slow down just a bit and follow the rules as they are. And I appreciate that you've had conversations with staff and chairs so that we could do that. So thank you, Representative and Chair Winkler.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm surprised this has been a practice in the past that we haven't resolved this issue. It seems like we have to balance. We have constituents traveling from far away, and if there we in HHS, we had two bills that were identical. One had a bill number, and one did not, but it was informational, but it was almost an identical bill. It was a grant bill. And we were trying to ease the burden on those constituents who are traveling from far away to testify on both of those bills. And that the bill that didn't have a bill number would come back to committee so we could take action and hear it again. But it was nice that they only had to travel to the Capitol one day and testify in support of those bills. So I guess one solution could be that we just put the language, a PDF language, and I'm not sure if this is happening now, but on the, if there is a House File X, that the language be posted, even if it doesn't have a number, so the public can see it, so we can reduce the burden on those constituents traveling from greater Minnesota.
I'm not sure if Mr. McCormick, if you have a response to that.
Madam Chair, members, there are a lot of instances where a bill draft or an amendment is posted on the committee webpage and on the hearing notice as a committee document. You'll see this a lot of the time with amendments where there's a key or crucial amendment that's available to you on the committee webpage. It isn't going to track to a bill necessarily on the bill tracking system, but it's available. And one thing that people can and should do is if they have a bill draft that they're going to hear as an XXX, if it's available to the chair of the CAA, they should post it on the webpage and say, this is the language we're going to be hearing, if that's at least a simple thing that could be done now.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. And if we don't have any further questions for Mr. Hamry, you can be excused from the table, and I can turn this over back to Chair Winkler. Thank you, Mr. Hamry.
So, members, we have two policies for adoption. One is on comp time and the other on legal fees. And I hope you've had a chance to review the policy on legal fees, which we'll do first. This is essentially updating longstanding understandings of what the legal fee policy has been to reflect current statutory changes. And so if somebody would put the 2019 P6 policy in front of us, we'll, with a motion, then we can discuss.
So moved.
Representative Herr moves the 2019 P6. And if you look at the document, essentially, we've gone from automatic recount to publicly funded recount language and statute. We make clear that if a candidate chooses a recount option and pays for it themselves, the person responding will be compensated by the House. And it also changes the way that we have limited legal fees to, I think, reflect more current practices in terms of billing. And we still have the right to review and reject bills that come through to make sure that they're reasonable. But that discretion then would lie with the Rules Committee. So that's the essence of the 2019 P6. Representative Dowd.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Winkler. I don't know if this would maybe be a question for Mr. McCormick or who would have drafted this language. I just wanted a clarification on what number two is there. We're removing some language that says, you know, recounted because of a request for an optional, and then inserting the subject. What is the practical application of the change in that language in number two?
Madam Chair, Representative Dowd, this came from Matt Garing in our office, and the practical impact is to just update this to the statutory changes that were adopted. And Representative Winkler talked about it, the difference between an optional and a publicly funded recount, and we're dovetailing that language, I think, with the current publicly funded recount statute.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick. So how would that work? And it's my understanding that if the recount falls outside of the statutory automatic recount, that a candidate can request a recount at their own expense and pay for it, and that the other candidate who's responding to that in the past has had, and we did it once this year, has had their legal fees paid because they're not the ones that requested the recount. Is that still what this would do, or would it leave some option for this committee to make something different than that happen?
Mr. McCormick.
Two answers. First of all, yes, that the situation where a person is forced into a recount because the other person paid for it and demanded a recount, so through no action of their own, they're now involved in a recount, that would be paid for by this committee. But I think if the key thing to also look at is on page 2, the lines 8 through 11, it gives clear authority, and this is pre-existing language, it's not new language, gives clear authority to the committee to both refuse to authorize a payment of legal fees and expenses, but it also gives clear authority of the committee to go ahead and make a payment. And so the judgment of the committee triumphs this policy. In a particular case, this committee could say, given the facts of this case, we are not paying this bill, or we're not paying part of this bill, or we're going to negotiate this bill. Also, given this paragraph, this committee could say, given the facts of this case, we're going to pay it, even though by general policy, if you initiate and pay for your own recount, we don't. There may be some unexpected fact situation that this committee would say, well, we're still going to pay this one because we think it's the right thing to do. So the last bit of language there, after you adopt this wonderful policy, which mostly applies, the last bit of language puts the responsibility right back on the Rules Committee to make cases and make determinations in hard cases.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a question for you. Was there something in, and I don't see anything here that I'm necessarily uncomfortable with as it's explained, but was there something that happened this last, as we made the payments on this year's, that triggered why we changed these, or do you foresee in the future maybe it would be done slightly differently than what we did this year, just for to put it in perspective of what we just went through?
Representative Dowd, for my purposes, this is cleanup language to make sure that our policies tracks with the way the statutes are written, and so it's clear going forward what the requirements are. Since if you looked at these, the language that was pre-existing, you couldn't find those in current statute, so it would be unclear. And so it's just cleanup, essentially.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the HER motion to adopt the 2019 P6 resolution policy, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the policy is adopted. The second item is comp time and time card policy, and I would like to have Ms. Knight come forward and explain the change.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
I'm Kelly Knight. I'm the Director of Human Resources for the House. Mr. Chair and members, the policy that you have before you, we're making one substantive change and a few minor changes, and I'll walk through that. On page 2 of the document, line 29, the stricken language where it says on or after November 1, 2004, that is merely cleanup language that is unnecessary. In line 31, where we have we've struck required, this is to address some confusion by staff where they don't work a full pay period. Either it's their first pay period when they're starting or their termination pay period. So required hours will vary. So this actually eliminates that confusion. On page 3, line 3, that this is a substantive change. And this changes our current practice for every 1.5 hours of work time over once someone has met the deductible, they get 1 hour of comp time. It will now be, once they've met the 4-hour deductible in the pay period, they will now accrue 1 hour of comp time for every hour worked over that 4 hours. And then finally, on page 4, is just the effective date. The November 1 date, that is the beginning of our comp time year, so we are taking it back so it equally affects all staff. And it also will only apply to those staff that are currently employed on or after the date that this is adopted. And the language in beginning on line 20 through the end on 22, typically staff will have between March 1 and March 15th to change their comp time election. And this will allow them the opportunity, us to set a different time frame. We've been in contact with our time card vendor, and so we're waiting to hear back from them as to when they're going to be able to do this. So we're not 100% certain we're going to have all the balances recalculated by March 1. So if that's not the case, we'll establish a different time frame to give everybody equal chance.
Okay, so any questions for Ms. Knight? Seeing none, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair Winkler. And I'm not sure if this is for you, Chair Winkler, or for Kelly Knight, but so for changing the comp time from 1.5 down to 1, why are we doing that? I'm just curious. What was the reasoning?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, this actually puts the House policy more in line with the Senate policy. And that's what's driven this.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Knight, what was, the policy looks good to me, but what was the 1.5, what was the reason for having 1.5 to 1 before? Do we know?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drozdowski, years ago it actually started out at 2-1, and then the House and Senate have decreased it, I think, as they've become more comfortable with the comp time policy. It was a new thing back in 1997 when we first introduced it. So the 1.5 was to give staff the option to be able to earn that time, I would say, in more direct correlation to the excessive overtime hours that they were working. But it was arbitrary at best.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you. And Ms. Knight, is going 1-1, do you see that there could be any, could it potentially provide for abuse of the policy or incentive for some people to abuse it in any way, to try to work extra hours during their regular time that aren't necessary in order to pad their comp time later or something? I don't know. Is there any potential for that?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, supervisors are required to sign off on anything that is submitted on an employee's time card. So, you know, any supervisor would have to feel comfortable with the overtime that is being worked by that employee and that those hours were necessary. We do provide reports to supervisors to help them see whether or not perhaps a workload is off kilter so that they can move things around so that perhaps something is not falling more on one person than another. But the bottom line is when the supervisor signs off on those time cards and submits them, they are saying that those hours were necessary.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Knight, to your understanding, is it working well in the Senate from where they're at now? I mean, has their experience been good?
Ms. Knight.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, to the best of my knowledge, yes, I've not heard any negative input.
Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the P3A amendment or
policy.
Policy, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski moves the P3A. Was there further discussion? Representative Schultz, did you seek recognition? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, you know, we really have a unique situation in the legislature where a lot of our staff, nonpartisan and partisan, work long hours when we're in session from January until May. So I think this is a fair policy, and I've heard a lot of staff who wanted to have a policy more similar to the Senate, so I'm glad we're bringing this forward and voting on it. I 100% support it.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this policy initially came out of a period of time when I chaired the Personnel Committee of the Rules Committee, and we did a number of reforms, and it was an early attempt to recognize just what was stated, the long hours that our staff puts in during the session. And it was rather arbitrary, I think, the 2-to-1, but we were plowing new ground at the time, and this is probably a positive step forward.
Further discussion? Seeing none, to the Drazkowski motion that we adopt the 2019 P3A policy. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The P3A is adopted. We also have minutes from our last meeting. I look for a motion on approval.
So moved.
Representative Doubt moves approval of the minutes of...
You know what? If I would withdraw that, I was not at that meeting, so.
Oh, and Representative O'Neill would have pointed that out, too.
Right.
I like details.
Anybody else?
Chair Winkler, I will move the minutes.
Representative O'Neill moves approval of the February 12, 2019 minutes. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And members, there is no further business that I have on the agenda. And if there's no further discussion, we are adjourned.